I'm Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. The year is 2002. The album Shut Up, You Fucking Baby, the artist David Cross, and my guest is this week is Chris Candy. Thank you so much for doing the show.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me, man. Sorry it's taken for a minute.
This is delightful. Yeah. You kidding? This shit happens. So this is one I was... I had forgotten, because I have it digitally, I had forgotten that the vinyl release, which you can no longer get from Stand Up Records, but, you know, maybe eventually they'll re-release it, but it's a three-disc, it's just a giant-ass album.
It's a huge record, yeah. I owned it on CD, and it was a double CD, I remember.
Yeah.
If that's true, yeah, I believe it was. It was
makes
two
sense.
Discs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's when I was re-listening to it on Spotify, it's like over 2 hours of material, so...
Wow.
It's a long 2 hours of 3 minutes runtime.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's out of press now. You can't get it on vinyl.
On vinyl, right. So I did make sure to just so everybody knows, full disclosure, I know the gentleman who runs Stand Up Records, and he was like, yeah, those are out of print. And I'm like, oh, damn. Well, we'll be advertising it anyway. He does make plenty of other delightful, fine vinyl goods.
Great.
But where and when did you first hear this album? How old were you? Where were you in your life?
I was trying to remember that. I was... young. I was in high school, so I believe I was junior or a senior. So around 17 or 18. I'm 35 now. That makes about sense. And I remember it was right after I had begun driving, and I went to Amoeba Records with my friend Eddie, and it was like the first drive I ever went on, like, you know, that like experience of like you're out on the road. And I remember that was one of the first CDs I bought, and it lived in my car for like 7 or 8 months. Like I just never took it out of, and it was honestly, I believe, really the first stand-up CD or album I'd really listened to. I wasn't really aware of the history of them, and obviously over time I found, like, you know, my parents, my dad's comedy record collections and all of that stuff, and
yeah.
So this was the first one for me, and it was very important when I was listening to it. So, yeah.
That's amazing. You know, re-listening to it, I have a ton of feelings about it, because when I first heard it, I'm a few years older than you. I was the, I want to say, perfect age to where I thought, like, he's speaking to me. I really thought I was being activated. I'm also realizing a lot of this was me being an angry young white boy. That's a lot of it. This is an angry white guy album, for sure.
For sure, yeah.
But there's also a ton of it where I'm like, yeah, no, I pretty much still feel that way. Even if my the way I feel about some of the language has changed, I'm sure his has too, because I know he's had to adapt. Everybody's had to adapt. There's certain words I'm pretty sure he wouldn't use. Like if I listen to an old Patton Oswalt album, he says the R word. I'll just say it now for those. He says retard quite a bit. And it's like, I know what he's going for, and I know I feel like he's an open-minded dude. So I just feel like if anybody goes back and listens to this, you know, there are going to be a few things that you're going to, you know, maybe you may not. It may not bother you, but there's some really good stuff in it, although it does date it saying, I think George Bush is the worst president of all time, where I'm like, well, David, give yourself
cheers. Yeah, I agree. I remember when we were initially working on getting together to record this podcast, I remember this record, and I re-listened to it. This was 4 or 5 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going, and I did a re-listen, and I was like, oh boy, some of this doesn't stand up.
Sure.
And then as I was listening to it today, I was like, oh, actually some of this has gotten life brought back into it.
For sure.
But based off of all of our quarantine world that we're living in,
big
especially
time.
With the 9/11 narratives that he's talking about.
That was the thing that threw me the most. I'm like, oh, fuck. Oh, okay. He's describing something that the rest of the country, except for New York, didn't actually have to deal with those specifics. But now we are in this weird periphery where now all of a sudden we do. Talking about masks being mandated and all this other little stuff, and talking about coming together. It's one of those albums that is like so... arch and angry, but also does have some heart to it.
Yeah, I did think that too as I was re-listening to it, and I think I have the same sentiment as you do. Is like, I felt like it was when I was younger, when I was 17 or 18, I had a lot of anger, and it really spoke a lot you know, my anger with the Iraq War and my anger with a lot of specifics. And he was just speaking to that. And it also opened my mind a lot to religion and my views on religion and all of these. It was a very interesting time for that record to hit for me.
Yeah.
And I remember it was just a dangerous record. You know, it was that one for me. But on the re-listen after going through my life now and being exposed to so much comedy and developing my taste and what I like, I go, oh yeah, that's David Cross. That's what he does. And that's what he's very good at. And I appreciate it. But yeah, like to your point, there's definitely language in it that dates it in the sense that certain words were okay to use for whatever reason,
right?
20 some odd years ago, or how old is this record? It's got to be
now 18. Yeah, it's 18 years old.
Okay, yeah, 18 years, and then you do listen to it and you go, oh, it was kind of okay to like say that in like a risque way on a stand-up stage.
Yeah,
you can't do that.
Well, and the weird thing too is like, so you then listen to it.
I guess, but.
You can, sure. I mean, you know, that's the one thing when people complain about censorship. You're telling me I can't say that. Nobody's saying you can't. It's just that now there are consequences, right? But he's on the same album. You can tell that his heart's in the right place, even if he's doing, because he's got this whole bit about how they execute the mentally disabled in Texas, and he does a whole bit that is definitely, in the way it's presented, would be insensitive. But he's doing that to then illustrate. Oh, isn't it, you know, it's a fully ironic point about, oh yeah, it's great to just execute the mentally handicapped. Yeah, let's just keep doing that. Like, it's very ironic. So he's obviously laying into it and really trying to break your heart, you know? And if your heart isn't broken by that bit, then you have totally missed the point, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's very good at, he's very good at making you feel uncomfortable and then making you question, maybe what your beliefs are, what they weren't. And that's why I found it to be a record that really stood up to me. And I still, when you asked me the question, well, what's one that I really enjoy, I went through the list of all of the ones, and like, I love Patton Oswalt and all of those like kind of alt comics. And I, you know, I think I later gravitated more towards Galifianakis, but I just never listened to any of his records.
Oh, sure. I
think I just, I remember his Comedy Central stand-up, the piano one. Is when I saw that, and this was around the same time as this record, I was like, oh my fucking God, like,
it's perfect.
That special was eye opening to me. But with that being said, I still have to say that this record comes back to a very important, you know, stand up record, for me, because it got my mind in the stand up. I don't do stand up, but I still go back and go, this one was a moment. And also this one to me, I know that he released several documentaries afterwards, some tour documentaries. Like,
sure, yeah.
And I was playing music. I was in punk bands and all kinds of stuff. And this record felt like a punk rock record in some ways. It felt like a punk rock stand-up record. And I really appreciated that. And I know he aligned himself with Sub Pop and a couple other record labels.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I don't know if I'm disconnecting on you here.
Oh, we had a little bit of a hiccup, but I will just make sure to notate it right now. But yeah, no, we've caught back up.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think that it had a very punk rock, indie rock feel to it, which was rad. And I remember around that time, a lot of my friends thought the same thing. I do remember with this record too, I gave it to my history teacher, or it was poli sci, and it was my first like progressive liberal political science, you know, or history teacher. And I was like, the stuff he was saying really opened my mind, and I was like, you have to listen to this record. Like, it's gonna, he was like the cool teacher. You could like give him stuff.
Sure.
And I remember, he listened to it and he was just like, he was like, yeah, I agree with some of it, and I don't agree with all of it. I was like, all right, whatever. Mr. Clark, that was the teacher's name. Mr. Clark. Yeah, Mr. Clark.
To be fair, there's a lot to either agree or disagree with in this 2 hours of insane comedy. There's so much where it's like, yeah, I can pick some of that out that works. Some of it, what did you want me to agree with? You know, like, it's probably like, which part? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, 100%.
There's so much going on in here.
I know, and I think that's what for me was awesome. Like, I don't agree with I don't agree with everything on this record, even to this day. Like, I disagree with some stuff, but that's not the point. I think for me, it's just like I said earlier, it's very much a David Cross record. I mean, that's what it is. David Cross record.
I, you know what? One of my favorite things about this has been ever since I, let's just say I acquired it not the right way earlier when I first got it back in the same time you bought it, like a normal nice person would do. I was in college and poor, but the names of all the tracks, just for those who do not know, are not named after any of the content. That is
no,
he clearly, like that. That's a very punk thing to do, obviously.
Yeah, I did like that. Yeah. Austin Powers saying yeah baby
is a track name. If baseballs had AIDS on them, terrible. My wife's crazy. They're just like, they're all just supposed to. I love the idea too that possibly could suck in the wrong person, but he doesn't care. He'd be happy if the wrong person bought this.
Yes,
and then listen to it, and maybe either had their mind blown or got so angry they tried to get their money back, which was impossible, I think, on albums for the most part.
The album art's cool. He's hugging he's hugging someone on the beach, it looks like. I don't know. I don't know if that's LA or New York.
Good question.
But Sub Pop did put this record out in 2002. This was a Sub Pop release.
The original release is Sub Pop. The vinyl was Stand Up Records.
Got it. Okay, yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, I like them when they qualify, and I will say half the time it's because my buddy Dan re-released him. He's like, this needs to be on vinyl. I'm not going to make any money on it, but you know, and I'm not telling tales out of school. He told Mark Maron that. He's like, yeah, I don't make any money off of this. It's like, oh, okay. I just like doing it. He likes doing it. So, you know,
that's awesome. I love vinyl. Yeah. Vinyl is the, you know, I'm sure a lot of people have brought it up, but it's like, we've gone into this world where it's just digital or vinyl. I mean, CD completely got wiped out of the entire
equation. I know, it's weird. I never, honest to God, never expected that.
Right. Yeah, I never did either. It's I like it. And it seems like that's going to be the case moving forward with a lot of things. I think we're going to go to like no more like very cool movie theaters. Maybe all the movie theater chains are going to be gone after all of this.
Very good chance of that.
Like home movie experience, people in their like crazy cinema theater situations, or like Alamo Draft House, or like New Beverly, maybe. I don't know. That's, I'm just doing hot takes left and right on this podcast.
Look
right
at
now.
You go, man. I want to know what you found. And also, you please let me know if anything's off the table to talk about. I want to, for those who don't know, your dad was John Candy, but I want to know what was in his comedy record collection, because he's many of our heroes. So I'd be curious to know what got passed down to you.
Well, the interesting thing was he was, you know, it wasn't like a thing. I was 8 when he passed away, but I have a lot of really strong memories with him. And he, with him, it's like a fact-finding mission. I feel like a little bit private detective kind of investigating his life and his absence.
Yeah.
And one of the things was finding his record collection, you know, and, He had a really great collection. He loved music, and then he had a vinyl collection. And I found Richard Pryor. I found Albert Brooks. I found Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner. I have original pressings of a lot of those. I could probably actually go snag some in a second and grab some. I could show you some of them.
That'd be amazing.
But yeah, like, actually, hold on. Let's see if the video doesn't cut out.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, we're mobile. We're mobile here, you know. But yeah, he had a lot of those early records. And I know that like in passing, I would find them and then they, you know, kind of melded into my record collection here. But he loved, you know, Mel Brooks, Carl Reiner, a lot of those people. And then I know he worked with Richard Pryor. But you know, I think my dad was just always like hip on what was like the thing to be listening to. He just loved ingesting comedy. And, you know, even though he never did stand up and he did primarily improv, here we go. Boom. Albert Brooks.
Oh, it's such a good fucking album.
Did you know that all geeks and gamers share the same gene? It's true. It's a gene encoded directly into our DNA that predisposes us to love cats. It's science. Nearly every gamer we know loves cats. What do you mean anecdotal evidence doesn't count? Are you questioning science? Okay, well, agree to disagree, but I'm still right. This pandemic and quarantine has been a strain on all of us, but we've been getting by with some kitten therapy in the form of our bottle baby fosters. We foster through an organization here in our town called Simply Cats, a cageless, no-kill, feline adoption center. Simply Cats has changed our lives. That is not an over-exaggeration. For 5 years, we've been fostering kittens and bottle babies, especially since kitten season seems to last longer and longer every year. We've learned the value of adopting and fostering cats in regards to patience, love, community, mental health, all by being involved with Simply Cats throughout the years. We love this organization and think it is deserving of whatever funds we can raise for it. Due to COVID, Simply Cats has had to postpone its yearly fundraiser, the Catsino, and they need help getting donations. That's where you come in. We are pulling in donations through the Idaho Gives campaign by holding a tabletop role-playing livestream Meowrathon on the weekend of May 2nd. You can find the donation link as well as other details at bit.ly.odndtgm. That's bit.ly/odndtgm. Every amount helps, and if, understandably, you are unable to donate at this time, please consider sharing our page on social media or even just telling other people. Please join us in supporting this amazing organization by listening to some ridiculous gamers, all of whom are genetically forced to worship cats.
Yeah, Albert Brooks here. And then it has the best part on the back of this one. It's got the mirror.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah, you know, it says, your script's inside. I wanted to do this record, you know, because I as I got older, my sense of humor aligns more in an Albert Brooks kind of dry world than it does of the David Cross. But mm-hmm. I have to be honest, you know, I didn't come up listening to that record, but that's a great, sure. That's a great record.
It's brilliant. I really love, one of my favorite things is that vinyl comedy at its peak was this thing that people were fucking with, you know, to the very yeah. end. Including some fellow SCTV folks. I mean, have you ever heard The Great White North? Have you ever listened to that album?
I have. It's hysterical.
So fucking good. That's another one I wouldn't have found out about if it wasn't for this show. And it's one of my favorites now because it, again, fucks with the form left and right.
Yeah, it's got the Rush song on there. And uh-huh. then, yeah, the Take Off to the Great White North, Take Off. Yeah, that one's really good. Yeah. I'm trying to think who else had vinyl from that era. I don't think the Schmengi brothers ever released anything.
You know, I was wondering that, and I didn't have a chance to look to see if your dad had any vinyl credits that I hadn't, because it's not anything I own, but that doesn't mean anything. I don't own by far the most comedy records, but
the only thing that we have that mm-hmm. we still have access to is he recorded a show called Radio, his radio show that was syndicated throughout America and in Canada in the early 90s. And I have all of those on vinyl still because they would send out copies of the show. They'd send out. Yeah, I could find some of those when I can get back over to my mom's house where they're at after this quarantine. But it's
amazing that those exist, though. Holy shit.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe we could do another one and we could go through one of them, or I could send them your way. You can give a listen. Those are cool.
That's phenomenal. What do we have here? Okay, that's what's showing up, actually, is specifically what you're talking about. Is Radio Candy, right? With a K?
Yeah, with a K.
Love it. Holy shit.
Is that on Discogs? Is that where you're seeing it? Or?
Yes. Yeah. There's not a lot of info on it. I'm sure you have more information than whoever put this up here, but yeah.
Yeah. Just to help her out as a favor, really. She was like, you want to digitize these? And so I did. And so it was a trip listening back to all the old Radio Candies, because I remember him recording those. But that's filled with a sketch. There's a lot of sketch comedy that's going on, you know, he brought a lot of his characters from SCTV and other actors, and, you know, they would do fake commercials and they would do, Yeah, it's something eventually as a project I wanted to re-release for him in some capacity in the future.
That would be beautiful.
I don't know how to do it justice yet, but it'll be something that potentially in the horizon. The thing is it's hard to re-release it because all the shows are cut with, you know, tracks in it. So it's like, sure. You have him saying like, all right, coming up next, we have, you know, Fleetwood Mac with, you know, and right to the top. And it's all this like early 90s. We got Rod Stewart with a new hit. You know, it's like, what?
I love it. Yeah, that's also, I mean, on its own, like, that is a weird bit of ephemera that is fascinating. But yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, it's hard to like, well, what do we leave? What don't we leave? That's funny. That's fascinating.
It's got all the old advertisements on it for, it's a record collector's kind of, if you're into comedy, I'll have to get some stuff over to you. You'll get a treat out of that.
That's phenomenal, man. Holy crap. I want to know, okay, so this is the first record you bought yourself in terms of
stage comedy.
What else was either in the house or were you exposed to? Did your mom have some stuff sitting around that she introduced you to? Were you a record family?
My dad was very much a music guy, but our musical tastes just differed. I mean, he was really into classic rock and the blues, and he was really, you know, he just loved music in general. Like, mm-hmm. he just had a bunch. But for me, and my mom and sister, they have like music taste and they love, but not as much as like, or just different, I guess, is the best way to put it. I remember my sister was always into like, you know, current radio rock or whatever was trending, uh-huh. or whatever was pop, and that was like her thing. And for me, I got like, you know, really into, big surprise, like ska music and punk rock music early on. When I was in, sixth grade all the way through eighth grade, ninth grade, and then I continued to play music. So what I would do is go to record stores in Westwood or Santa Monica, and I would buy like a Mighty Mighty Boss Tones record. And then uh-huh. I'd look at the thank you section of the record, and then I say, oh, okay, they thanked like, you know, this band, Real Big Fish, Skank mm-hmm. and Pickle, these bands. And then that would be my network to listen to new bands.
Love it.
In doing that, it led to me learning about this record label called Asian Man Records that put out a lot of early ska and punk labels, ska and punk records. And the owner of that, this guy, Mike Park, ended up becoming like one of my best friends. And I became friends with him just from like calling the phone number on the back of the CD. Yeah. So for me, that's where music started. And I started playing in bands and touring. And I think that that's also kind of why, you know, I was into punk and ska. And that's why I think the David Cross record really lined up, because the tone of it felt like everything that I was already exposed to musically. And I also liked how he toured with bands. Like, I think he did.
Oh yeah. Right.
Yeah. He did. He didn't, you know, and then I also did like really dig those, like the, Was it the Real Comedians of Comedy or it was like Patton and Galifianakis?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Sam, who did that?
Crap. Posehn, I think, was in there. Bamford.
Posehn. Maria Bamford. That's who I was thinking about. Yeah. Maria Bamford. Yeah. But was David Cross on that one? I can't remember. Maybe not.
I don't think so.
No,
he
wasn't.
It seems like he should have been, but it's not.
He wasn't. No, it wasn't him. That I'm thinking of, forgive my mind. I really liked the tone that those four were doing, what Cross was doing. And of course, like, we haven't really gotten into it, but Mr. Show was like a really big influence on me, like comedically and tonally. So I already knew about David Cross going into this record from Mr. Show.
Yeah. You must have seen Mr. Show so young, though. How young were you when you saw that show?
Yeah, I was super young with Mr. Show. That was probably eighth grade, ninth grade. You know, okay. I think that was when I started seeing that. You know, we had an HBO, cable. And so sleepovers, same friends, Eddie, you know, grade school friends, high school friends, you know, staying up late, watching public access TV, you know, watching HBO, Mr. Show would come on. And then again, like, the irony of it is like, you know, SCTV ended up influencing a lot of these other later sketch groups, you know,
sure.
But for me, I wasn't tracking that, you know, and so for me organically, it was Mr. Show is my SCTV, you know, yeah. So it was like watching all of those sketches were just, you know, mind blowing. And then I got to see one of the tapings, and I met, you know, he would never remember it, but I met David Cross at one of those tapings. And I was just like, I remember it being a very cool night for me, because a friend of mine, her husband or boyfriend, I'm not sure exactly, you know, they brought me over to the show, just invited me to go see a taping. And I was just so like, you know, it's like Odenkirk and Cross and all of these like giants. And I just remember really digging it. It was super fun. A great, great memory, great night to be able
That's
to kind
mind
of
blowing.
Be a fly on the wall and hang out and listen to them talk.
So good.
Yeah, I love all of that stuff. I see John Ennis around, actually, ironically.
Oh, really?
Mr. Shit. Yeah, he's more in, because I'm an actor, and so I would see him when we'd go out on auditions. I'd see him out for like commercial auditions and stuff. But I just retold this story recently, but I remember like I was crossing the street in, I think it was Santa Monica or Beverly Hills or something like that. No, it was Beverly Hills. And John Ennis was crossing the street. And he crosses and he goes, "Hey, don't I know you from somewhere?" And I'm like, "No." And he's like, "From Boston? Don't I know you from Boston?" And I was like, "No," but I knew who he was. And he was like, "Are you sure? All right, man. Well, yeah, I think I know you, but I'll see you around, brother." And ever since then, I would see him at auditions, and he's just like a booking machine. Like, he books so many commercials.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
And now we have a bit more of a rapport just from seeing each other in the room, but I'll never forget that night. Just like, he's very friendly. Anyways, I will go all over the fucking place on this podcast.
No, please. Are you kidding? This show goes off the rails. You are one of the least off the rails people I've had in a while. And I like it when we go off the rails, so don't worry about it. Let's see. What about since this album? Like, what stuff did listening to this album make you want to listen to and pick up?
Sure. I think I went on a pretty obsessive David Cross kind of deep dive. I think I tried to pick up as many of the things he had done. I think he had a couple other bootlegs. I mean, Amoeba would always have kind of bootleg copies of things. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the titles, but I remember specifically jumping over to, let's see. Yeah, I think I did like Patton's records, and then I did Brian Posehn. I loved his stand-up record that had Metal by Numbers at the very end of the record. the song that he put on with Scott Ian from Anthrax. I really dug. Those are the ones that are standing out specifically in regards to comedy. And then, you know, when I would go on tour a lot, I would tour with my band or my friends' bands, you know, we'd listen to comedy records. They would be the ones you'd throw on. And I also like specifically remember, you know, when Sirius and all of those radio channels would come on and you'd tune into the comedy stations. I remember just not liking that kind of comedy recorded as well as I liked these records, you know. And I think it was because as I've gotten to know comedy a bit more, you know, these guys and women were architecting like jokes in a very clever way. You know, it wasn't your traditional, you know, comedy store kind of insult,
sure,
whatever.
Yeah.
You know, these were like stories, but they had, you know, setups and punchlines and just these very different ways. And that was so awesome to hear. And I think, you know, I know that, I feel like that's where comedy's gone to now. I remember another one, Dane Cook. Yeah, that record was huge. Holy shit.
Sure.
None of them, I think, you know, it's interesting. We were talking about it a little bit earlier in the podcast, but like, I honestly, all of the other ones are funny, right? Like, if they'll show up, you know, Patton's is you know, of its time, and this one's of its time too. But the difference is that, you know, we said it is David Cross's kind of anger in this that comes through the jokes or his point of view is still kind of true in this modern day, which I think is what made it still hold up. Like, when I was listening to the 9/11 stuff, you know, Gabriel, if Gabriel wants to go rollerblading, mm-hmm. Was that the guy's name? Gabriel, I think.
Yeah, 100%.
I was like, yeah, that's kind of what's going on now. Like, you have people who are like, no, I'm just going to go out and mm-hmm. like, you know, live my life. And like, I'm not going to wear a mask. And it's like, we've all seen a person who's like that. And we've seen communities of people who are like, fuck this. And it's like, like face slap, kind of like, okay. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, and as I've followed him more too on Twitter and then gotten to know his sense of humor more in like a more current day, I think it's, you know, it's still very much him, you know?
Oh yeah. It reminds me so much of, you know, just his most, well, actually I could be wrong. I don't know if it was his most recent Netflix special, the Make America Great Again one. Was that his most recent? I think it is.
Oh, I'd have to check. I'm not sure.
I'm the asshole who can't remember. I have the album, which he just entitled America... Great, which I think is pretty good.
Yeah.
The album version of it is slightly different, but it's very similar. Like him just taking on more recent stuff with much of the same anger. And also there's one part that is equally dark to the execution thing on this album that is just like, holy fuck, how is he painting this? And how did he drag me along for this too?
I know. Yeah. It's crazy. I think what's interesting to note about him too, like as like a performer, is like, you know, he is incredibly successful for how downplayed he has of his personal life. Like, you know, you can see him out and I've seen him in the streets of New York. You know, he doesn't really like, he still lives a life, right? You know?
Sure.
But he is like, you know, his IMDb is incredible. He's been in so many movies over the years. He's been, you know, he's a working actor. He never credits himself for that.
Right.
He's been in more movies than most people. He's an incredible actor, an incredible comedic actor. But he also worked on one of the most prolific sketch shows. And then he's got this unbelievable stand-up career. If you got any of that, it was my praise to the guy. But I didn't get it.
It took a second, but it got there.
Okay, good. Yeah. I just think that it's sometimes I forget, like, the scope of this man's career is really an incredible for then, just an entertainer.
And add to that his skill. One of the things that he doesn't explore, apparently, I think I've only heard him do it. Maybe he's done it in sketches on Mr. Show. I didn't watch Mr. Show when it originally came out and missed out, obviously. But there's an episode of Community where there's a backdrop is like a Lord of the Rings style song, and it is him singing, and he has the most angelic voice on the planet.
Yeah.
Beautiful singing voice, and not something he ever explores or talks about.
No, well, yeah, like he does that also in the Ronnie Dobbs sketch where. I think at the end of that sketch, he breaks out into song, or that whole thing turns into like a musical. But he's just, you know, he's the real deal. You know, it's actually, I was going to bring this up too, because I was listening to a YouTube yesterday of, I think it was Joe Rogan talking about stand up, and it's true. And this is in like any art form, art, music, acting, stand up is, you know, people talk about finding your voice, and it's like really clear to pick out, you know, David Cross's his voice. And I think after listening to this record, I heard a million David Cross copycats. You know, if it wasn't on the stand-up stage, because I wasn't, you know, hitting the stand-up clubs, it was just people at shows shooting the shit. They had the same cadence. They'd have the same observations that, you know, and I was like, wow. And I probably did the same thing.
I know I did, and I'm not a stand-up either.
Yeah, I absolutely did it. It just in conversation, and that's how influential it was. In picking this, I was like, this guy has a tone and a point of view that people will try and adopt. And I think that's very influential in regards to into any art form for that matter.
Agreed. Yeah.
But yeah, I love that. So you don't do stand up.
I don't know. I have thought about it, and that to me is enough to say I shouldn't do it if all I've ever done is thought about it. You know, like, I don't want to be the dick who's like, you know, I'm going to think about stand up for a bit. Let me try that out. It's like, no. If I had something and I tried it out, cool, but I'm not. you know.
I respect that. Yeah, I everyone always tells me to go into stand up, and I'm never going to do it. I just feel like I hosted a friend's show, and I just don't think that way. And like maybe and I agree. I feel like people who love stand up or do stand up, they have this urge to do it. And some of those people suck. They're not good, but at least they have more of what I have. I don't have. They have the urge to want to do it. I never woke up in the morning going like, I got to do stand up. And I feel like people, you know, I have that with acting, and I have that with music, and all these other things that I spend my fucking time doing. But but with stand up, no, I never did, and so I didn't want to discredit people who are real, you know, who were down to do it.
Well, it's the same thing too. Like, as an act, I mean, I'm not a professional actor, but I act all the time. Like, it's one of those things where, like, if either you or I went and did stand up, we'd probably get better at it the more we did it. But those people, at the very least, would be getting, they can also get better, but they're still there for the right reasons, and we'd still be there for the wrong reasons. And it's like, just let them have this, Jason. I do too many things as it is, you know?
It's
dumb. It's dumb of me.
Well, I got more into improv too, which is like definitely not the, let's just say, I don't want to knock improv because I love improv so fucking much.
Sure.
It's like this most beautiful art form to me. But if there were a cooler thing to do right now, it would go to the Comedy Store than it would be to like go to a Second City show.
Like, sure. Yeah.
I feel like in LA right now, or well, before all of this, geez Louise. But I naturally can improv better than I can do stand up. And therefore I've gotten to a more awesome place with improv than I had ever gotten with stand up.
I get that.
You know what I mean? It's just,
and I'm the same, like, the thing is, I'm the same way with improv, although I will say I have no reservations about shitting on it at the same time. I love it, but I also think it's terrible a lot of the time, but I love doing it. I love being the idiot making a dick of himself. I don't mind it, you know?
Yeah, improv's really dangerous because, you know, all of this is, I mean, it's stand up improv. It's like tension, right? Like, we're relieving the tension of the audience. And if you get five or six people up there that don't have like a strong bond or know what's going on, you know, then the audience can be really nervous. Okay. And then like, what happens also if the audience is kind of in a shitty mood, you know what I mean? Then they don't want to see your scene about, you know, working at a tire yard and, you know, someone's mother's pregnant, you know, like, who knows where it can go. You want to try and do something crazy. You can say someone's joke and say like, oh, Cross has got this really funny joke about 9/11. Oh, okay. I'd like to hear that. I can't say to you, I've got, I did an improv sketch last night that was really funny where I played an Italian chef. And then like, it was really funny though, because like, we were doing it in the desert. It's like, what? That could have been the funniest.
Let me give you an hour of groundwork to explain this one. It's impossible. Yeah, it's so self-contained. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that I chose this record because it is of a time in my teenage, early 20 years that really resonated, I think, in a sense of like how I was feeling and in my views of the world that I, you know, still carry with me. And you know, and that's what it was very much for me. And that's why I love the record.
It's perfect. You know, there's a lot of it that is obviously still in my blood. And if it wasn't, I would feel like a bad person. You
right.
Because a lot of it is just very much like, it's just angry humanist ranting. And that doesn't get old to me, that part of it.
But that's what was funny when I first re-listened to it. I was like, damn, he was angry. You know, like, and I've gone through a whole thing. Like, I've played in this band Chodo Ghetto forever. Like, we still play here and there, but like, that was like an aggro hardcore band. Like, I'm like screaming and shouting, and I was like, not in. And now, like, with therapy and everything, I was like, I didn't realize how angry I was back then. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so of course this record resonates with me. You know, I wasn't in touch with any of my own fucking anger, man. Or showing up in my music and all that stuff, but I didn't realize it until, and so then when I listen to it now, I'm a little bit more at peace with my anger. I was like, holy shit, man.
Well, I mean, there's also this, there's a huge part of, like, honestly, white male privilege that allows us to, like, sometimes latch onto a thing from pop culture and live it out without anybody telling. And second somebody tells you not to do that, you're like, fuck you, I'm angry. And it is helpful as an older, getting older, to be like, oh, okay, I was being dumb.
I agree. I think that that's one of the takeaways when I listened to it too, as I was saying, oh, this is actually also like a younger version of him. Like, it's
absolutely
not,
that's a huge part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to give him credit on that because, like, you know, I think he has a kid now and is a father and maybe married. I'm not sure, but I know he's lived more years and is probably looks back on this record and goes, oh, why the fuck did I say this? You know, or maybe not. I don't fucking know. I mean,
who knows? The more I talk about this one, the more I talk about you with this, about this one with you, my brain is fried. I'm so fucking sorry. But then also talking about like Werewolves and Lollipops with the person I spoke about that with, I think it was
Patton's
Christian
records.
Brune. Yeah. Like those, again, I think, perfect records, you know, and of their time, and obviously some stuff that I wouldn't re-listen to. I really, really, really want to, I would love to sit Patton down to talk about his old stuff. Same with David Cross. I'd like very much to know how they feel about it, because I'm sure there's stuff they love. I'd like to know what about it has changed and, like, what they would do differently. And I also, honest to God, it's refreshing to have somebody who's like, I want to talk about this album, but also, yeah, I'm realizing that there's some stuff that maybe has changed. Not everybody wants to admit that the stuff they liked when they were younger might not be perfect anymore, you know, and that times change.
Well, I think also this was, you know, right around the beginning of the Iraq War. And and I knew at the time, based on that history teacher, who was just basically going like, this war is bullshit. Like, don't, like, you know, these are the things that are wrong with it. And I remember being angry about that. And, you know, I don't want to divert it fully into a politics thing, but currently now I've just been, you know, same kind of boat where I'm just like, oh my God, like, you know, and so, you know, I think that, it's okay to have that anger. And and this was a great record to kind of like, you know, and that's what I was thinking too. I think, oh, you got me?
Yeah, I did. I think we lost a little bit. I got you cut off. You came back right as you were saying, and so, and you were summing it up. So if you want to go back and say it again, please. I'm writing down when they're happening because you're saying smart things and I don't mind keeping them in.
Perfect. I think that I think basically like it was a record that came out during, you know, the Iraq War, like I was saying, but it was good for me at that time to have another voice out there, you know, because this was before YouTube, before all of that stuff. You know, we all have our tunnels we listen to. You know, I'm more of like a progressive liberal. I want to know what Bernie Sanders and all those people are talking about, you know. So I have my little tunnel I can listen to what, you know, and get back what makes me feel, I agree with, right?
Yeah,
well, back
sure.
then we didn't have that. So it was these records. So it was like, you know, and it was, you know, it was David Cross saying, this is bullshit or, you know, and then I remember because the religion stuff, I'm not an atheist. So I remember even then going like, oh, people can be atheists. You know, it was very
interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it was very, it was opening. I knew people could be atheists, but I didn't know that people could have, now I do, but I didn't, he was, I think the first exposure, like I was just, you know, getting to the end of the record and I was listening to it. And, you know, the whole thing about the promise keepers and, you know, I always remembered from this record specifically, the joke he makes where the people who wrote the Bible were dumber than the people who are getting out of bars late at night or fucking people on Fox News.
Yeah.
He has that whole take on the Bible. And I remember being more religious because I grew up Catholic then and having that really kind of shake me going like,
yeah,
well, what do you mean by that? You know, and now obviously I have more of a worldly view on it in the sense that I'm so traveled and worldly. No, that like I just kind of look at it now going, oh, I get what he's saying. That's his journey. His journey is no God. Okay, cool. That's how he's living his life. That's how he sees everything. Okay, cool. Perfect. Now I get it.
Yeah.
But
it's also interesting to me too. That's fascinating because I think if I hadn't spoken to somebody who has just said, oh, no, I'm not an atheist, part of my brain might have been like, no, you have to be to appreciate this. Obviously, that's not true. But it is very good to then hear that perspective of like, no, I mostly am on board with so much of this, except, you know, this little bit, but whatever. We found different paths to kind of the same thing, right. You know?
Yeah. And I yeah, that's very true. Yeah. It's a fun record. And so it's a fun record.
You know what? You know what? I always, at the end of the show, I'm always like, hey, tell me in two sentences why to listen to this. You kind of did it earlier. You can do it again if you want, but you've already condensed why to listen to it. I think you gave some pretty good reasons, but if you want to, you can condense it again.
I can really get into this one and make it sound way more important than it needs to be. I think that for me, it stands for a time in my life. It really resonated with anger and perspective that I think I've carried with me throughout my life. It was something that I found for it to be, it's a one of a kind record too. Like there aren't other comedians that sound like him, and he has a very unique voice. I think the first time I saw him was on his HBO stand-up special. And then obviously the David Cross stuff, I mean the Mr. Show stuff. And then this record came out when I was able to go to Amoeba, you know, so that it was just the timing of it. But, I feel like if people want to go in a time capsule and kind of get an idea of what America looked like, in like 2002, which we haven't really explored yet in our in our timelines of history, I think this one does a really good job of getting that like subculture-y, you know, concert venue pre South by Southwest, even though that shit was already going on, like
sure
indie comic experience that also can kind of like basically explain what happens in the next, you know, if you listen to this record, you go like, oh, now I get why Vice magazine exists. You know, now I get why all this stuff exists. And
yeah,
it was incredibly influential in its tone. And if I disappeared on you there, I apologize.
For a split second, but I think I know what you said. You can feel free to reiterate it if you want.
We'll catch up here.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, that was it. Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's a great record. Give it a listen. but be open-minded and know that just, you know, I don't know, people say weird shit, whatever,
right? Yeah, I mean, you know, that's it's its own thing, and it was worth a re-listen for me. This is going to come out not this week but next week, so is there anything you want to promote? Where can people find you, etc., etc., etc.?
Okay, my favorite part where I get to talk about me,
of course.
What have I been doing this whole time talking about me? I am, you can find me on Chris Candy Forever on Instagram, or Chris Candy For You on Twitter. But I guess it'll kind of come out next week. So I've got work airing in Canada. I was on a show called The Wedding Planners up in Canada on CTV. And then
love it.
I'm on a show in the summer with Jason Priestley.
Oh my God.
called Private Eyes, that's going to be coming out in the summer. And then I do a podcast called Bumper to Bumper with my friend Rick, and we're constantly putting out all kinds of comedy content. We just released a movie called To the Stones, which is a short film that you can get for free. And I always have all kinds of stuff I'm putting out there in the world. I love making stuff. So
that's fantastic.
That's me in a nutshell.
Thank you so much for talking with me. This has been a ton of fun.
Oh, I loved it. Thank you so much.
Of course. Maybe come back and we'll talk. Maybe we'll talk Albert Brooks or something else, or, you know,
get into some Radio Candy stuff.
Oh yeah. That's got to happen. That sounds, I cannot believe I didn't know about this. I'm annoyed at myself for not knowing about it. Thank you guys for listening. Check out my Professional Blur podcast. It's where we talk about extra work, AKA background actor work. And
so good.
That's at professionalblur.com. Thank you guys for listening. And as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. You can email us at podcast@comedyonvinyl.com.
You can also send snail mail to Stolen Dress Entertainment, P.O. Box 805, Burbank, California, 91503. Subscribe to Comedy on Vinyl on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you can find podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating and write us a review. It helps. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Comedy on Vinyl, or find everything in one place at comedyonvinyl.com. A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune in to the new Stand Up Records channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast. Visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, watch videos, and imbibe freely of our multimedia content going back 15 plus years. Stolen Dress Entertainment.
Hey, it's my turn. Ah!